You're listening to episode 169 of Mid-America Reformed Seminary's Roundtable Podcast. In this broadcast, the faculty of Mid-America discuss theology and cultural issues from a Reformed perspective. I'm Jared Luchibor, Director of Marketing. Thank you for tuning in. In today's episode, we begin a sensitive and difficult topic that has affected many individuals and communities. We're going to be looking at abuse and the church. Reverend Andrew Compton is joined by Reverend Danny Patterson of Second Parish Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Portland, Maine. Reverend Patterson recently taught an interim course at the seminary on this subject. So in this introductory episode, Reverend Compton and Reverend Patterson will explore some of the complexities and challenges surrounding abuse within the church, and then they'll transition in the weeks ahead into recognizing and responding to such abuse.
Well, it's good to be back with you for Mid-America Reformed Seminary's Roundtable Podcast. I'm Andrew Compton, Associate Professor of Old Testament here at Mid-America. I also teach some counseling, and that is part of why I'm here with Reverend Danny Patterson, who is a pastor in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Maine. What town again?
Portland.
Portland, Maine. Not the Portland on the other side of the country, but the Portland.
No, we like to call it the original Portland.
I think of it as the Portland in the part that looks like the animal head. You know how the country's like an animal with the legs in, you know, Florida and Texas? Well, that's the head. So he's from Portland in the head rather than Portland in the hindquarters. But anyway, we're getting a little off track here. I'm getting glared at by our producer. No, but Danny's here. He has he's an alum of our institution, has served on the board, and just has been such a blessing to the school by coming out every year to teach a class, and some years like this one to teach two classes. And kind of that's what we're here to talk about, is the not just the elective that Danny taught this January on abuse in the church, recognizing and responding to abuse in the church, but even just more broadly, we thought we'd spend some time discussing this very important topic that frankly has not had the attention that it deserves for many years. And we're seeing some very good movements in our day toward addressing this better. And our hope is that as a place that trains pastors in particular, we can enable pastors to minister better and more effectively into these areas. So, yeah, thank you again, Danny. It was a long introduction, but
yeah, happy to be here.
Well, I wondered if what we should maybe start with in this first of a couple episodes is just sort of how we got here. And it strikes me when I graduated from seminary, when I started in the pastorate, the earliest things I was noticing were how to minister to victims of abuse. At first, it was just people I was learning who had been through abuse, either domestic violence or sexual abuse, years before, and were still dealing with the effects of that. And so, for example, when Justin and Lindsay Holcomb came out with their book, Rid of My Disgrace, that was just such a helpful resource to me. And then a few years later, they came out with a domestic violence version of it as well. But initially, that was really my focus, is thinking, I need to minister to victims who have been abused. But we've seen just in these last 15 years even, real development, and the conversation has moved. It hasn't moved from caring for people who have been abused, but it's thankfully grown to even say, no, we need to be more proactive in preventing abuse insofar as we are able, so that our churches have safety in place, and not just safety in terms of windows on classrooms and protocols, but just an ethos that cares for those who are being exploited in one way or another. So it seems like we've had a shift. I mean, what have you noticed in your own ministry? We're not too far apart in age and too far apart in when we began ministry. So
right. I guess as I was just in the calculations while you were talking, but I think this is my 20th year in the ministry as an ordained individual. 21, I think, going and doing some sort of ministry after seminary. Mm-hmm. From my own experience, Abuse was not talked about that much when I was going through seminary. It was mentioned. It wasn't really even something that was talked a lot about in the church at large. And I was kind of thrown in the deep end in my own life because of a situation probably 8 or 9 years ago with some friends of ours that weren't in our church. They were, we knew them from other circles. And my wife and I both noticed that there's something about their relationship, our friends, that, it was a strained relationship and was marked by some things that were very concerning to both of us, but neither one of us really had the categories to kind of, understand what was going on now, and that really sort of forced me to ask questions about the relationship and talk to them about that relationship. And even then, I was having a hard time wrapping my head around what was going on. But what I now know is that it was an abusive relationship. In which the husband was using really as his God-given gifts, and there's a great book called When Home Hurts by Jeremy Pierre and Greg Wilson,
right,
who really address this when they say, you know, abuse is when someone uses their personal capacities and gifts to diminish the personal capacities of another individual in order to control them and dominate them. And that, looking back on it, really what was going on in that marriage, but I didn't have the categories to kind of wrap my head around, but it was kind of the spark that ignited the fire, in me at least, to be more aware of those dynamics in relationships. And then it's kind of, I've kind of moved it, you know, very quickly and really becoming concerned about it for the church at large. And I am encouraged. I think the church, I will say this, I think the church is coming into a new day and a better time in being sensitive to these matters.
Yeah.
And so I'm really encouraged. A number of situations in my own ministry that has kind of propelled me further to look into this was really kind of my story as to how I've gotten involved in sort of domestic abuse and domestic abuse advocacy.
You know, and I think it's significant that in both our cases, and just hearing you talk reminds me, both of them were born not out of theory. You know, it's not that we started reading books and jumped on a bandwagon, but it was born out of pastoral work with real people. And yet at the same time, it's interesting to see how in bigger currents of society these issues are coming to the fore. Now, you know, the Me Too movement has some weaknesses, but it has some real strengths. I mean, the only weaknesses, you know, I mean the way it's been politicized in some ways, and of course it's sad when people on the other side then thereby dismiss the concerns. But that really is in sort of the public sphere started putting this on more people's radars. And then even the hashtag church too really started to push it in broader ways. So that's been an interesting development.
Right.
And also the publicity garnered, but just the work of Rachel Den Hollander. I mean, it's a name I think a lot of people know now because of her tireless work seeking justice for herself and for so many young gymnasts who had been sexually abused at the hands of a team doctor, this Larry Nassar. It was a very public trial. But listening beyond that into some of her own writings, seeing her and her husband's just experience with the local church and how the church didn't quite know how to deal with them, how to care for them, and in some ways didn't want to even go into that set of topics that were very uncomfortable. And to be completely fair, I mean, I'm not trying to throw names out just to make this you know, let's name drop for everything. But I was so moved in her book. It was either in her book or somewhere, but her church recognized how they had wronged her. And they actually had there had been restoration of some kind. They no longer go to that church, but, you know, just a real rich picture of how, as the church, as we are learning new things, as we're continually being conformed to Scripture, as we are doing so, for example, in our day with missions and evangelism in Reformed churches. It's not that we've not been concerned with missions and evangelism. One of our colleagues here, Dr. Beach, has often talked about we're in a day where we're taking something that had been sort of in the corner and pulling it into the middle of the room. You know, it's not that our theology doesn't support missions. But in the same way with abuse, we've always cared for the downtrodden pastoral care, but we've not devoted sufficient attention to it. Well, we have this new day where we're doing that. And again, just that church in particular came to my mind as this is a very hopeful way forward. We can say, you know what, we haven't been focused on this. And that doesn't mean we need to then say, you know, oh, we have nothing to say anymore to the world. No, the answer is to say we have so many resources now. And we have a good way forward to help move in these new directions. Tell us about some of even the work that you're involved in that is trying to move in these new directions.
Yeah, I do think I'll say something really quick.
Feel free to respond to my little monologue there too.
Yeah, I think it has been a little bit of a wake-up call to the Protestant church, because we're used to hearing about the sex abuse scandals in the Roman Catholic Church in the 90s and so forth. But it was really some abuse scandals in the Southern Baptist churches that came to light that really led the Southern Baptist Church to take this more seriously. And I think it was, I really do think it was a wake up call to the Protestant church at large to see the same sort of scandal happening in one of the largest Protestant associations in the world.
Even parachurches, actually, you saying it reminds me, I'm glad you pointed out the SBC, but in recent years, how many leaders of parachurches, even parachurches purportedly designed to improve the Christian family, to help the Christian family, have been rife with sexual abuse.
Correct. Yeah. But I mean, as I started to read more, and one of the seminal books that really got me helped me wrap my head around the dynamics of domestic abuse was The Heart of Domestic Abuse by Chris Moles. And that then connected me with an organization called to Peace Ministries that offered a domestic abuse advocacy certification through their organization. Which was a year long worth of courses in advocacy, in which at the end they offer a certification as in domestic abuse advocacy, which was even further more for me was helpful in opening my eyes to the breadth of domestic abuse. You know, when we think of domestic abuse, we tend to have an idea of it in our mind in which we're thinking, okay, someone has physically assaulted someone else. It's gone too far. The police have been called. They're slapped in handcuffs. There's clearly an egregious sin that has happened here. And we've tended in the past to limit domestic abuse simply to physical abuse. In other words, the misuse of physical power against someone else. When in reality, physical assault and the use of one's physical power to dominate and control someone else is actually what I might describe as the next to the last stop on in a whole line of a misuse of power to control and dominate someone else. And so there's clear indications that abuse is not just limited to physical assault of an individual to control them, but there are non-physical forms of abuse. What is usually and sometimes called emotional abuse, verbal abuse, psychological abuse that I think the church and those who are training to become ministers of the gospel need to be able to recognize if they are going to care well for the flock of God. There is a reason why Jesus equates anger with murder.
Yeah.
There's a reason James describes the tongue as a deadly poison. And there's a reason why Proverbs describes and says there are words that are like sword thrusts, right? And so whoever coined the phrase "sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me," that's probably one of the most misguided statements I think that has ever been perpetrated on the human race.
Yeah, it's interesting. Early in my ministry, I remember Paul Tripp's book, War of Words, and right away I had speech on my radar, and I loved Proverbs. I still love Proverbs, but I was doing a lot of research even in graduate work at the time in Proverbs, and I stuck with how words are so serious and affect for good or for ill. I mean, Paul talks about the difference between corrupting talk and then words that give grace and build up. And then even recently, Sam Logan had a book, The Good Name, The Power of Words to Hurt and Heal. We've sort of had the category of words on our radar, but haven't really brought it into the orbit of abuse until recently. Although, at the same time, I've found it a bit ironic, the more I've learned and the more I've read on this, that there was a time, and I won't drop names, but you even have individuals who have used language like, well, what are we up against? I mean, is it a husband who has just slapped his wife around a couple of times, or is it like a true form of abuse? And I'm going, wow, even on the physical side, you have people saying somehow slapping of a spouse around is not itself considered abuse. How much more then are they likely to dismiss something like emotional or spiritual kinds of abuse or verbal abuse as well?
Right. I think it should maybe we can think about it this way. You can have forms of abuse that are non-physical forms of abuse, right, without it escalating to what we might call physical abuse. But you will never have a situation in a relationship, in a marriage, where there is physical abuse and not the other forms, or not to have some other form of abuse present in that relationship. I don't want to be too dramatic here.
Sure.
But when I say that, when we say that physical assault is the next to the last step in a long train of stops on a spectrum of abuse, the last step is fatality. I mean, the last step is actual
physical murder. Yeah.
And so I think it bears remembering that when a relationship, even if that assault is episodic, in other words, I've never encountered a situation these are extreme situations in which someone is physically assaulted in their relationship every single day, right? That needs to be understood as occurring within the context of a broader pattern in which someone is using the gifts that God has given them whether it be their mind or their words, and or also their physicality, to serve themselves rather than serve, for example, their spouse. And so when we think of physical abuse, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. And I think that's what we really want to impress. And that's what I really wanted to impress on our students in class, is that when someone has gotten to a point of escalating to physical assault in a relationship, you are in a very dangerous situation. And that person has endured many other forms of abuse that have actually led up to that. And our desire, of course, is that ministers, with the help of others, be able to recognize signs of this in the church, to have their hearts and their minds attuned to the reality that it's not just happening out there in the world, but it's happening in the church too.
Well, this is just why this topic is so important, why we're so thankful that not only you are involved in this just in general as a pastor, but why you came to Mid-America to teach the class, and why we're talking now. I mean, this is one of these topics that's very difficult. I mean, we're talking, you and me, in some ways very clinically about this, because we deal with this in terms of our pastoral work fairly regularly. I think you more so than me. But it doesn't downplay how serious this is very emotional, and I think it can in fact be very hard for some of our listeners to be hearing. And yet, it's such an important conversation. And in fact, in our next episode, we're going to kind of move to the next step of even recognizing abuse. And hopefully if you come back, we do hope you will come back for our next episode, and be able to start hearing through ways in which we can recognize abuse, potential abuse, actual abuse, and before an episode further where we can talk about how we respond to it.
Next week, Reverend Compton and Reverend Patterson will look at ways we can recognize abuse in the setting of the church. For more podcast episodes, you can find us on our website at midamerica.edu/podcast, and wherever you listen to your favorite shows, be sure to search for and subscribe to Mid-America Reformed Seminary's Roundtable. I'm Jared Luchibor. Till next time.